Peter Gagg, who drives it through. Oh, that's a magnificent goal, a sensational goal by the Hullamal captain, Mitchell van der Gagg.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Lane's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic! Oh, wow! Oh, wow! Lukas Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable. And that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And there goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park, twisting, shouting, shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself, James Buster, will look back on what was an incredibly disappointing defeat to Dundee at the weekend. We'll preview this Saturday's game against Ross County. And we'll no doubt have plenty of other things to discuss over the course. I think that the issue of goal line technology might come up again as well. How's it going, guys?
Hi, no bad.
Very good, thank you.
Good stuff. Well, Jay, I'll start with yourself. And to be honest, defeats don't tend to stick with me for very long. I tend to get over a disappointing result fairly quickly, but this weekend is a wee bit different. It's just the manner of the defeat, so many poor performances in the team. There's just something missing, and in a big game like that, it's really disappointing to see. Maybe go down as one of the most disappointing 90 minutes of the season, which is quite incredible when you think of some of the results we've had over the course of the season.
Yeah, I mean, as it's getting to that stage of the season, I know we seem to have, for a good few weeks now, have been saying, you know, how important the next game is and how it's potentially the most important of the season so far. But, you know, we're in that situation. We've got four games left. And to put in such an abject performance against Dundee on Saturday, I think you're right. I mean, we've every right to be completely disappointed with it. You know, you say there was something missing. I think there was a lot of things missing. First and foremost, just we were completely lacking any creative spark, particularly in that first half. Dominated possession, but did absolutely nothing with it. And unfortunately, you're not going to, you know, there's no point in having the best pitch in the league if you're not going to do anything with the possession you've got on it. You know, we didn't create anything. You know, I'm struggling to really think of any real clear-cut chances prior to Samson dropping. You know, we didn't really do anything of any note. And, you know, the whole season we've kind of spent going on about how, well, you know, we're better than we're showing. We've got the players to get us out of this. It's getting to the point where I think we've got two players, really, who you could argue are a cut above, and that would be Moulton McDonald. And unfortunately, they both play in positions that you still need someone with a creative spark to give them chances. So when you're not creating anything, you know, you're essentially taking your two best players out of the game. So it's worrying, very disappointing. You know, I was watching the John Hughes interview earlier where he was tearing into his Raith Rovers players, and as much as I wouldn't, you know, I'm not comparing the two sides. First of all, I don't watch Raith Rovers, but you know, I'm not suggesting that there's a lack of effort or lack of trying, but you know, these are the most important games of the season. We've got four games left, and if you can't, you know, get your sleeves rolled up and get tore in against Dundee on Saturday, then I really, really worry for us getting into these last four games. We were talking earlier on, we've got a tough, tough game against County on Saturday. Ackies have perhaps got the easier of the other two, you know, playing Inverness. And then by the time we then get Inverness at the end of the season, Dundee have already played them. So if Dundee and Accies can beat Inverness, you know, we could be getting into that last game of the season, cut adrift at 11th place. It's just that a worrying situation to be in, and I think it's about time that, certainly ourselves, we've said so many times in the podcast that we have the players to get us out of it. I think we need to accept we don't. We're just not good enough. We are 11th because we deserve to be 11th, and games like Saturday, you know, showed that in abundance.
Buster, we don't tend to assess individual performances and then kind of lambast the players, but Saturday there was some key standouts for all the wrong reasons. I'll start with the opening goal for Dundee, where Craig Sampson, I think he sees the boy Haber in his line of vision and just absolutely shits himself. Drops the ball, leaving them with a tap-in for the boy O'Hara. And you're 1-0 down in the first half where Dundee barely ventured up the park. Yes, we didn't do very much with the possession we had, but at least we were comfortable. We weren't losing. And a draw would have meant we would have still been above Dundee in the table. We'll go on and talk about referee decisions and or the decisions of assistants and so on a wee bit later on, but that's basic stuff. The way that we lost that first goal and the way we lost the second goal wasn't much better, but these individual errors are so, so costly, and unfortunately I think with Craig Sampson, he's so prone to these errors, I don't think we can afford to have him as our goalkeeper for much longer, because there's been more than a few instances this season where he's badly let himself down and badly let the team down.
Yeah, I think you're right there, but I think the problem is we didn't look to bring another goalkeeper in, basically. For all the chat of who we should have been, what positions needed strengthened, you know, during the pre-season and even in January, there was never really any serious chat from Motherwell, at least, that, you know, we should be looking at a goalkeeper. To be fair to Craig Sampson as well, he had a good few months there. You know, probably was one of our better players at points as well, but as you say, he's seen, you know, the big Canadian guy in his line of vision completely shot himself, no concentrating and grabbing the ball, probably not even looking at the ball when he's got that big guy charging in on him, but that's not how he should be doing it. That was simple, that was bread and butter stuff, you know. It amazes me how he didn't actually catch that ball, or how he, I don't even like speaking about it, to be honest with you. I don't think the formation is working either. You know, it looks pretty good at times, but we don't have a right and a left back. We lost that, I think it was a second goal, we lost that because we don't have a right back in there at the moment. Maybe that's to do with, you know, Tate being injured at the moment, and maybe we'll go to a back four when we get a right back in there. But, you know, Hennigan looks pretty lost. Same against Partey. So when he has to come across from being one of the backs, he has to come across into that right back position. That's at least twice now. A guy walked past him, basically. I don't think that's working either. I think that's something that needs to change as well.
Yeah, Jay, I actually feel kind of annoyed at various factors of the match, and Stephen Robinson, for me, hasn't changed a great deal. Yes, there has been a few kind of glimmers of light, and I think the performance against St Johnstone was relatively good, but I think that was maybe only when we put it aside some of the crap that we've seen over the course of the season. Kelly, we battled our way to 3 points. Inverness, we showed a bit of character to respond after being pegged back. But this persisting with a system that players are clearly not comfortable playing with, he's not in a position where he can come in and make any changes to the team, because he's arrived in February when it's been too late. So he's got to basically piss with the cock he's been given and use the players in our squad and try and deploy them to the best of their abilities. I think there are a few that perhaps aren't good enough, or a few that are carrying knocks and perhaps wouldn't be in the team if it wasn't for the amount of injuries that we've got just now, particularly in a defensive situation. But it's just basic. If it's not working in two or three occasions, then just stop persisting with it. The kind of go-to substitution with bringing on Lionel Ainsworth as well, it's everything we do just seems to be very, very predictable. Dundee must have been rubbing their hands that we did play with the three at the back on Saturday, because we're so easy to breach in terms of our back line. And Dundee didn't really have to work very hard for any of their goals.
No, I mean, there's absolutely nothing you've said there that I can disagree with. For me, the back three just clearly isn't working. Every manager in the world has preferred setups. That's, you know, the way it goes. We obviously know that Martin McGee was tended to be fond of the 4-3-3, and you know, it's just one of those things. All managers have their own preferred setups, and if Stephen Robinson is a big fan of a back three and he wants to use the summer months to go and identify the set, you know, defenders that can play in a back three, and you know, I'll look forward to seeing that next season. But you know, sort of forcing a left back into a back three alongside, well, Carroll McHugh, who, let's be honest, has been really good at centre half, but who was signed primarily as a central midfield player, and then putting Ben Hennigan on the right hand side of a back three, it just doesn't work. As Buster said, Hennigan cannot play on the right hand side of a back three. He is a old school, you know, centre half, will header anything that comes near him. But if you put him in that kind of vulnerable, isolated area on either side of a back three and allow an attacking player to run at him, he'll get torn to shreds. It happened at Thistle, it happened on Saturday. It's not good enough. And I think it's obvious. You know, I think this is one of those few things that happen in a football park that isn't necessarily just down to opinion. I think that anybody can kind of see it's not working. And I would like to think that Stephen Robinson has enough about him to not go down the Mark McGee route of, you know, the Mark McGee route is, of course, I know what I'm doing, you know, what I say is law, this is right, and I will persist with it, because to not persist with it is to sort of, you know, admit that I'm wrong. I would like to see Robinson actually say, you know what, it's not working, we'll go to a back four. I know that Tate's out injured, but at the end of the day, Jack McMillan, Ferguson, whoever, you know, I would rather be going with a back four with someone like that in it than going with the back three that we've been using, because it's not working. And if Aki's have anything about them, and if Martin Canning is doing his job, he might not be the best manager in the world, but if he's prepared them for the game at New Douglas Park, for example, or Jim McIntyre, who, you know, coming down to Fir Park, he'll be doing his homework. You know, these teams around us have to know, just by watching us, that we're really vulnerable with that back three. If you can get in behind us, if you can get in that gap, in behind the wing back, and attack, particularly attacking Ben Hennigan with the ball on the ground, then we will crumble. It's really obvious, and it's something that really needs to be rectified, because at the end of the day, if you are a big fan of a back three, that's great, do it next season. This isn't a time for, you know, changing the systems and flaunting what you think is the best system. This is a time for basically getting guys at the back and grinding out, you know, horrible draws or horrible 1-0 victories if need be, because these last four games are so, so crucial. And at the moment, there's nothing I saw on Saturday to suggest if we persist with that play, you know, that setup and playing that way, I'd really struggle to see us being anywhere other than in the playoffs come the end of the season.
Buster, for the Dundee third goal, there's a situation where Hennigan's got three attempts or three really good chances to take his man down and doesn't make the challenge. We're quite often accused of being too soft and perhaps not being cynical enough. Going into these last four games, it's do or die. We've got to get a bit tougher, don't we? Yes, you don't want to see your team kind of kicking other teams off the park and anything else, and I don't think we're a team that's capable of doing that. But you've also got to get a bit nasty at this stage of the season, because you can guarantee that the other teams are going to certainly do that. And if we're going to go in with a kind of soft approach, we're as well just resigning ourselves to the playoffs before our ball's kicked in these last four games.
8 fouls. We made 8 fouls on Saturday. Dundee had 20 fouls. I was looking at these, sorry, as we were talking. And as you says, maybe we need to start kicking teams off the park. Maybe that's what we should be doing. It's maybe not nice, but this is not the time for niceties. This is where you have to do anything to win. You know, even when Dundee were winning, you know, 2-3-1, whatever it was, their goalkeeper wasting all the time under the sun, which is, again, fair play. You know, it's the dirty wee tricks like taking the ball to the other side of the 6-yard box to, and you're taking a goal kick start. You know, obviously we need to be winning to start employing tactics like that, but it's these wee things that we're shite at as well, and we need to actually, maybe we need to just start kicking teams off the park if they can't play, if they can't walk, basically. Maybe that's what we should be looking at doing. As you say, the first half, first 40 minutes or so, we were thinking this is going to be a pretty good game. We're doing well. That one wee error, one major error, flipped it on its arse, and we just, the second half was utterly abysmal. The second half was atrocious. I can't even find words for it. It was terrible. But as you say, I don't know if we've even got it in us to, the players don't seem to have any sort of will to battle for anything, so I don't actually know how these last four games are going to pan out. If we don't go ahead in the game, we're certainly not going to win it. I don't think there's anybody showing me any sort of spirit or passion that suggests that we, right now, that we could, you know, come from being a goal down to go on and win the game, but I honestly don't know what the answer is.
Yeah, you know, as well, that losing a goal bang on half time and then 3 minutes into the second half, it's almost as if there's a bad time to lose a goal, we'll manage to make sure we do that. The other thing I found as well, chasing the game, 4 minutes injury time in a game that is pivotal in your chances of safety and over the course of the season, 4 minutes injury time, and we didn't seem to be desperate to get the ball forward or anything else. It's just a real lack of urgency a lot of the times as well. Players stoating over to take corners, people, oh no, you take the throw in. It's just, some of this stuff is just so hard to watch. I feel like an absolute idiot for actually being looking forward to going to Fir Park on Saturday, because it's just utterly dreadful. Just so, so disappointing. And I think over the course of the season, we maybe have just said, do you know what, it's going to be alright and everything else. I now think completely the opposite. I think we're utterly atrocious. I think the attitude of quite a lot of the players in the dressing room seems to be utterly atrocious as well. It's just really, really, that's just as embarrassing as the 5-1 defeat, because everything should have been in our favour going into that game on Saturday. We had been on the back of a good victory. The tails should have been up. We were at home. Dundee hadn't won in a long, long time. And we just failed to turn up yet again. And I don't know how many more disappointments we could take before we actually realise, yes, we are in this position because we completely deserve to be in the position. We're going to talk about the fact that yet again we had a perfectly legitimate goal disallowed because the ineptitude of the officials and not being able to spot, well, a ball that was clearly over the line on this occasion. Jay, we talked about it in great detail last week in terms of the goal line technology, and unfortunately we don't really believe that it will be introduced anytime soon due to the fact that it's a very costly thing to implement. But that's now three occasions this season. I know we did get one in our favour, and there was a Dundee fan on Twitter today keen to point that out, but there's a big difference between getting one dodgy goal and getting three perfectly good goals chopped off that should have stood.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a difficult one because particularly that Dundee one, you know, the one at Dens Park is incredible. It just kind of shows the ineptitude of the officials in Scotland, and that they can't see these things, particularly the assistant referees. I have sympathy in certain situations. The Aki's one, for example, I think I'm happy to give the assistant referee the benefit of the doubt. You know, if he didn't see it, he didn't see it. But the game, on Saturday in particular, if the assistant referee doesn't see that, it's because they're not in the position to see that. And if they're not in the position to see that, they're not doing their job. And ultimately, it could come down to that kind of thing costing us our top flight survival. In saying that, that isn't what's going to cost us our top flight survival. At the end of the day, if we looked more interested, if we attempted to create more things, if we decided to actually realise that we have a central midfield rather than just launching the ball over their heads time and time again, then perhaps we would create more chances and therefore it wouldn't necessarily be a big deal. Because at the end of the day, if we had went on and you know, even won the game on Saturday, yes, we would speak about it. We would talk about how it was another example of poor refereeing. But it wouldn't have been a big deal. And I think it's about trying, yes, talk about it. It is a talking point. But it's important that we don't get sidetracked with that and kind of give it too much credit, because, you know, that's not the reason we lost the game on Saturday. We lost the game on Saturday because we weren't good enough. And it just so happened that there was also a decision that went against us. So, you know, yes, those are the kind of, that's the kind of bad luck you see from teams who ultimately get relegated. But teams who get relegated don't get relegated purely because of those reasons. They, you know, those decisions, they get relegated because they're not good enough. I think that we should be, you know, creating more chances and scoring more goals. And those kind of decisions shouldn't be relevant. And it's as simple as that. Very poor, very disappointing. But it's not the reason we lost the game, and it's not the reason we are where we are.
That being said, though, Buster, you do kind of feel for those involved, given that this is much more than relegation would mean, the loss of jobs, for some people the loss of their livelihood. You've got to be getting these key decisions right. I know that we could have easily went on and Dundee might have decided to go up the park and score again, because, let's face it, any time they did threaten, bar a save at the end from Samson, I can't really remember them going forward and not scoring a goal. So, yes, it's kind of, it's all kind of conjecture, but the fact that Tom Haley's foot, his trailing leg, is in the net, it couldn't have been more blatantly obvious. I know that we struggled to see it from where we were sitting. I got a text message from Nick, who was sitting in the Cooper stand, and she said it was clearly over the line from their seats. The linesman would have had a decent view of it. The referee, perhaps his view might have been a bit more impeded, but you've got to be getting these decisions right. I don't know whether there's a way around, if you can't afford the goal line technology, to do something else. We've got GoPro technology in the net that we're certainly shooting into. So they must be able to feed off some sort of signal. I don't know if there's maybe a cheaper way to do this, but it's just imperative we start getting these decisions right.
I think what Jay said is very, very true. And I don't want to really be up on, you know, we lost the game and this happened and that happened. But I think even if we consider our goal against Hamilton Accies, it probably didn't even go even near the line, never mind over it. It's a bigger chat in general about the quality of refereeing as well, in my opinion. You know, I'm including the linesman when I'm saying refereeing, obviously, as well, or assistant refs, whatever they're called. Because that one, for example, miles over the line. The Hamilton one didn't go over the line. And yet there's...
No, you mean the Inverness one?
Ah, sorry, yeah. That's the Hamilton, sorry, because I'm getting mixed up with the other one. The other one that was no given either. Yeah, so the Inverness one, sorry. I don't see how they can be so wrong in both occasions, to be honest with you. The fact is, these guys have got to be sure before they can give a goal, which is fair enough. But I don't know how do you train for these sort of things? How do you improve on seeing things? I think it's maybe merits a bigger discussion about the quality of refereeing and the standards as well. But unfortunately, you know, as we said, because of the pricing, I don't think goal line technology is going to come to Scottish football anytime soon. You mentioned, obviously, you know, the wee GoPro cameras that we have, and then we show the highlights on. I don't know how effective or quick or even cost it would be if something like that, you could go back and... Again, that takes us back to the video refereeing that we mentioned last week as well, I suppose. I don't know how costly these things would be or how quickly you can get these things done. I know, obviously, when they they highlighted in that international, it was like average of 40 seconds of decision or something. But again, that's him probably using top of the range software and stuff like that. So as much as I enjoy the debate over these things, it can be a right pain in the arse when it goes against you. And even the Inverness one, it was kind of stupid that we, you know, it's not kind of stupid, but it's kind of embarrassing nearly that we take a goal for that when it was nowhere near over the line. So I don't really think there is an answer. I don't think there's a way of, as I say, improving the people who make these decisions. Is it, you know, whether or not you get the best vision or you get a straight line of view or whatever, you're going to get things right and wrong on occasion. So I think, to be honest with you, the way the game is now, we're stuck with this. And it, as you say, it can be costly, but there's other factors in there as well, probably, you know, more important things like creating chances and scoring goals for on our own side of things. But I don't know where or how you get around this. Sorry.
Talk about the Ross County game on Saturday, Jay. The fact that it's maybe taken us a few days to get over the defeat against Dundee, you would hope the players, though, will be able to dust themselves off. It was described as 5 cup finals to end the season. We've now got 4 games. We're still very much in the mix in terms of being able to avoid this 11th spot and get ourselves out of the problem we've got ourselves into. It's not beyond us to go out and remain undefeated in these last 4 games of the season. The problem is the application, as we've said so many times before. We really need the players to give themselves a massive boot up the arse and be ready to go all guns blazing on Saturday to get the 3 points going into what will be another massive game when we face Hamilton at New Douglas Park the following Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, you know, we seem to have the same conversation most Saturdays. You know, we have it in us to, you know, remain undefeated to the end of the season, and we've got the players to turn it around. 34 games of the season have gone and we're second bottom, and rightfully so. So, yes, we probably, you know, when you take our results against the teams around about us and you take the quality of the teams around about, do we have the ability to go and, you know, get the required number of points in the last 4 games? We probably do, but we need to show it at some point. You know, we can't be sitting there doing the podcast before the last 2 games of the season going, right, we've now played 36 games. Surely to fuck, we've now got it in us to actually turn that around, because at some point, you know, it needs to, you know, at some point the label of us being better than we're showing has to be dropped, and we need to just accept that we're no very good. So we really, really need to start turning things around. Obviously, Ross County will be, you know, going into the game with a wee bit of a bounce after destroying Inverness on the Friday night. We, on the other hand, are going into the game on a defeat. That said, we know that we are, you know, physically unable to string 2 home wins in a row together, or 2 wins together this season. So maybe the fact we lost on Saturday might actually put us in a more positive frame of mind going into the game against County, because, you know, we're not trying to, you know, win 2 games in a row. It's just, the whole thing is kind of depressing at the moment, to be honest. You know, as we said before, it also depends on the lineup, how we set up at the back. It's just not a good position to be in. You look at, you know, a team like Kilmarnock, who have not been without their, you know, problems this season, with the manager leaving and a lot of players, you know, losing Koulibaly, and, you know, we've beaten them twice at Rugby Park, and yet they've managed to turn things around, and you'd imagine are all, I know they can still get dragged back into the playoff position, but they'll be looking, you know, just to get a few more points just to secure their survival this season. And then you compare them to us, and we just can't get things going. You know, wins are rare, good performances are rare, and we seem to spend a lot of the time just making excuses for it. You know, the players are better than they are, or, you know, the tactics aren't, you know, working, or, you know, we've had goals disallowed. It's just not a very good position to be in, and I just don't think we're very good. Thankfully, Ross County, you know, Dundee, Hamilton Accies, Inverness, they're all not very good either. It's just unfortunate at the moment that only one of them seems to be worse than us. So we'll see what happens on Saturday. A bit of a response, you know, again, going back to the John Hughes interview, and if MD's not actually watched it yet, go and watch it, it's a good laugh. But he's spot on. And I think that's what we need to see on Saturday as well. We need to see fight. If we go and line up with the back three again, or we get another goal cut off that should have crossed the line, or Craig Sampson makes another error that causes a game, you know, whatever it is, just give us a bit of fight. You know, get the sleeves rolled up, get tore in, kick folk off the park if need be, like you were saying earlier on, and let's look like a side that's actually using these last four games to, you know, fight tooth and nail to stay in the division, because it's not really the impression that I'm getting at the moment.
Buster, a bonus for us will certainly be the fact that Liam Boyce will miss the game. He put in an excellent showing against Inverness on Friday night there and scoring off four goals in a derby match. That's a feat that we thought that was reserved for Louis Moult, but clearly not. So that's a big loss for them. Basically their talisman by far, their best player in the showings that I've seen from Ross County so far this season. Another factor is that we've not lost to County this season. A 4-2 win at Fir Park. We beat them 2-1 there, and then we shared the spoils back in September, a 1-1 draw. So we know we're capable of getting a positive result. I'm just trying to kind of grasp any positive that I possibly can here. But another thing I would like to talk about is James McFadden turning out for the 20s today. We've been bemoaning the lack of creativity. I know McFadden's been horrendously injury prone, and I think most people would regard him as perhaps past it. But is that maybe an option? We're lacking creative players, or players that are creating anything at the moment. McFadden, when he's had a few cameos this season, he's done not too badly. I'd be maybe looking at putting him in the 18, and maybe it is an option from the bench. It's certainly someone that's going to come in and, if afforded the opportunity, is going to try his heart out, which we've been moaning about just now. There's a lack of that just now.
Well, as you says, it's certainly something we'd all like to hope he come on and, you know, show a wee bit of the old magic. But as you said again, I think he's basically done. There's no actual. He's only 34 years old. You know, it's not as if he's 40 years old. His injuries have taken his toll, and that's him. I think, you know, whether or not he comes on, can make that wee cameo, you can say maybe 20 minutes or whatever, create something for us. He's certainly got the skill. But I honestly think he's maybe done, to be fair. I don't think you'll see him. So, you know, again, though, like you say, playing for the under-20s, I didn't expect that either, to be fair. But is he the answer? I don't know, to be honest with you. It's certainly something I would like to think he could do for us, and I don't actually know. As you say, how many times has he appeared this season? Two or three times at most. I don't actually know how he is, so fitness wise, stamina wise, you know, how fast he even is, because he was never fast to begin with. But it's certainly something which I suppose is worth a roll of the dice, isn't it? And just to go back to your point in Ross County's suspensions and things like that. Liam Boyce is a cracking player. I've always liked him. I thought he'd been brilliant. So it's great news that he's it, basically.
Yeah, we'll actually make a wee reference to the 20s today. A 3-0 victory. Actually, Jamie Semple came on for McFadden, 15-year-old. And then after that, there was a 14-year-old came off the bench. So I think, like so often in the last couple of years, it seems like the good news and the positivity is coming out the youth team rather than what we're seeing from the senior side. But let's kind of try and grasp at something from that as well, and hope that some of these guys are developing and can maybe develop very quickly and make their way into the first team, because we certainly need something. Jay, a conversation that was quite prevalent after the game on Saturday and into Sunday and Steelman Online as well, I saw the thread, The Great Rebuild, and there were suggestions that the whole team is basically going to be shaken up over the summer. It's talk of, well, you know, it's a kind of usual knee-jerk reaction on there where everyone should be sacked after every defeat, but the it does feel like we're heading towards a stage where there is going to be a massive rebuilding job at the club, whether it be the senior players, guys like Keith Lasley, whose contract's up at the end of the campaign. You've got guys like Lou Moult entering the last year of his contract and perhaps the last opportunity to make a decent wedge in him and selling him on. Chris Cadden won't be flying under the radar either. There's plenty of guys that could potentially move on. There's guys that you would expect will move on. So there's going to be a massive job facing Stephen Robinson, regardless of whether we stay up or we go down. It'll just kind of dictate what budget he's going to have, what league we're playing in, I suppose. So do you get the feeling that it is almost getting to the stage where we're coming to an end with this squad and this current setup, and that big changes are just around the corner?
Yeah, I think you've got it pretty much spot on. I think when you consider all the different factors in this summer more than most, it's hard to see anything other than that. You know, you've got, as you said, guys who are our biggest assets, who are probably now at the stage where they're probably, you know, in their prime in terms of getting a good sum for them, the likes of Moult and Cadden. There's guys who just aren't good enough, you know, just at a point, you know, I think it was earlier, I can't remember who it was, but when we were talking about it earlier on, and someone mentioned, you know, we're talking about McFadden earlier on, and someone mentioned about how, well, you know, 15 to 20 minutes of McFadden for the bench has got to be better than 15, 20 minutes of Jacob Boyle for the bench. So, you know, we have guys who are in the squad who simply aren't good enough. There's guys out of contract. There's guys, as I said, who, you know, we will be looking to sell on because that's our business model. So, no, I think in terms of, you know, the kind of the all the different ingredients in terms of the squad. You know, you also factor in a lot of the older guys, you know, Lasley, Hamill, McManus. You know, how many years do these guys have left, if any? So, yeah, I think there is a big, big rebuilding job on the cards. And, you know, it's just interesting to see how we approach that. You mentioned there about the under-20s and the young players and that, you know, and the team that are starting to come through. And you've got guys like, you know, I know Ross McLean was back playing again today, I think, and Campbell's obviously now in the first team. Robinson's thrown in Shea Gordon. So whether, you know, the rebuilding job actually involves a core nucleus of a lot of young players and then adding around that, or whether we continue to do what seems to be a pretty scattergun approach to recruitment and has been for a few years now, where we seem to sign far too many players in particular positions. You know, we're sitting talking here about how Richard Tate's out and therefore we don't have a right back, and yet we, you know, have spent the most of the season with an obscene number of centre mids. So it'll be interesting to see how we approach that. I don't know what Robinson's sort of approach to recruitment will be. I know that obviously you know, I don't know, it was Oldham, that one. I keep getting mixed up between Oldham and Oldham. You know, obviously had to build a team from scratch, but that's, you know, it's not quite the situation we're going to be in, so hopefully there'll be, you know, a little less pressure on him and he can go and identify targets. But I've really no idea what to expect, because at the end of the day, is our business model working at the moment? You know, you look at some of the guys we've brought in with the intention of selling them on, has it really worked? Other than Moult, you know, this current batch, not really. If we're going to be going and taking chances on non-league English players, I would rather we were taking chances on established, you know, a couple of established players who can come in and just play in the first team for a few years. You know, stabilise things, get us, you know, stay, you know, if we're going to stay in the top flight, try and get us, you know, back comfortably mid-table, bring in a couple of guys who maybe you aren't actually planning on selling further down the line, maybe you're actually bringing them in to improve the first team. It would be nice to be doing that again. And bringing them in to complement what is a potentially a good young team there. So it'll be interesting to see, but you're completely right. It depends what division we're in. I've got no doubt whatsoever that Robinson will already be, you know, looking at players and coming up with targets for next season, because that's just what you have to do. You know, nowadays in football, you can't wait until the summer. You need to do it now. And obviously, you know, whether there's going to be two lists and one will be for the Premier League and one will be for the First Division, we'll need to wait and see. But it'll be interesting to see. But no, you know, your original point, I think, is completely correct. I think there is a rebuilding job on the cards, both through necessity and desire, because I think it's necessary that we're going to have to rebuild, because a lot of players will leave, particularly first team players, I think. But also, I would like to see us rebuild through desire, because there's a lot of players in there that I don't think are good enough.
Well, I put the question out on Twitter last week. It was basically, we sit here every Monday and kind of take on the role of football managers and tell people how we think it should be and everything else. So I was looking for people's best Motherwell achievements on Football Manager. And then I'll ask you guys for yours as well. I hope you've been thinking about the answer all weekend. I'll go through some of the answers we had, though, first and foremost. Ninja Potato 10 on Twitter, Champions League winners 2027 with Motherwell. Hashtag enough said. Hashtag greatest achievement in life. he wasn't able to give us any examples of players he signed because they were all kind of made up on the computer by that point. Alan Wood got in contact to say, I still can't get over my Well team getting beat by Liverpool on penalties in the UEFA Cup final, so he's still kind of reeling from that. While Maxi got in contact to say that his greatest moment was Fraser Kerr scoring against Celtic in the last minute to win him the league. So I think that there's a fair degree of success there if we're looking for a potential replacement to Stephen Robinson at the end of next season. But hopefully it doesn't come to that. Alan Wood did add as well, that was about 99-2000 and it still hurts to this day. So there's nothing like being really over dramatic. But the floor is for you guys now. Have you got any successes that would maybe match that or even surpass the achievements of winning the Champions League with Motherwell?
Not necessarily with Motherwell, no. All my great Football Manager achievements have come with the mighty Montrose. So, sadly, unless we do get relegated, then I don't think I'm quite caught up for the top flight.
I had a game, I don't know what version of Football Manager it was, I think it was maybe 2001, I think, or something like that. But I had a game where I got to the Champions League final. I can't even remember if I won it. I probably didn't, otherwise I'd probably remember that. But Julius Agahoua, I had Julius Agahoua in my team, and he scored 4 goals against Inter Milan in the semi-final to see me into the final. So I must not have won it, otherwise I'd remember as well, surely.
Well, if you were more like Alan Wood, then it would still be hurting you if you had been beaten. So it's just so I think... I think Ninja Potato just takes this with the Champions League winner, but Fraser Kerr scoring to win any league would be a good moment. It would be up there with Craig Reid scoring in the last minute to secure second spot, I would imagine. Don't think that anyone on the Aberdeen podcast that we didn't notice the fact that they started tagging us in posts when it was 2-0 for Dundee. They went very quiet when they lost their game 2-0 as well, it must be said, but they really would like us to go down, it would seem. So we've certainly done something to annoy them. Guys, I think that's pretty much all we've got time for this week. Hopefully next week is a bit more upbeat, because this has been a bit of an event tonight. But thanks very much for your time.
No, thanks. Just to apologise as well, I'm hungover and sad, so... if I didn't sound the most upbeat, sorry, that's what it is, as you say. Shite weekend, shite football, and then just being drinking all weekend made me sad and depressing.
Jay, thanks very much.
Cheers. I'm not quite as depressed as Buster, but still quite sad because we're shit.
I actually feel more depressed about Buster's plight than I do actually Motherwell at this moment in time. I'm very sad.
Hashtag pray for Buster.
Don't worry, I'm on holiday this week, so I'm going to lie in my bed all week.
You enjoy that. Right, okay. You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you, goodbye.